and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 616.
Ooh. we didn't think about this. We could have done a Marvel type episode.
I know.
a pre-postmortem on these phases.
there'll still be enough episodes before our big phases 4-6 wrap up. There'll be plenty of preaching from the from the bully pulpit, not to the choir, but from the bully pulpit about what the hell were they thinking. But no, right.
Don't you already have notes on that episode?
Yes, I have an entire page of outline. An outline of that.
This is gonna be Mark's
Parallax new... 2.
It's your new Parallax episode.
It could potentially. I don't know if it'll ever. It won't have the passion probably of the Parallax episode. Though to be fair, Corwin and Dan helped make that episode because it was one of those things where it could have gone off the rails, but it didn't. Like I'm trying to think, there was something else. There was another episode that we did. I don't know if it was the Zero Hour retrospective. There was something that in theory could have been not that it wasn't good to begin with, but it could have been on a Parallaxian episode level, but it didn't start. But the way it started kind of dictated how it went. While the Parallax one was just perfect, and I did have a little bit more of a bullet point outline because I usually only have bullet points. That's how I do my just talking points, just so you can go from point A to point B. I don't have like 55 pages of notes or anything. I just have like the Parallax one. I had a put the bullet points on the screen or something, and that was about it. But yes, I would suspect that there's one episode between now and then, non-Green Lantern related, certainly that could rival the Parallax episode. It could definitely be the what the hell were they thinking episode of related to phases 4-6.
All right. Well, you know, those projects are always fun. It's been a while since I've had one of those, so I remember the excitement and envy you. but the good news is, because of tonight's issue, we may actually be freeing up space in our schedule to tackle projects like that in the future. So with Green Lantern Dark number 6 that came out, 7, we'll be wrapping it up, but that means this series will be over and we'll have a little bit of free time on our hands. But we're talking Green Lantern Dark number 6 with, and I was going to do this, and then it just immediately spaced on me, so give me 2 seconds. Writer Tate Bromble, artist Werther Delladera, colorist Giovanna Nero, letterer Tom Napolitano, covered by Werther Delladera and Giovanna Nero, assistant editor Ash Padilla, editor Andrea Shea, and senior editor Andrew Marino, and of course the Tangent Universe based on a concept by Dan Jurgens.
Now, other than the Jurgens thing, wouldn't it be nice to, just for the hell of it, just because it's easier for us, wouldn't it be nice to go through all these credits one time and just have somebody like Bob Smith? it seems like these names get more elaborate every single time we have to do one of these things. I'm just like, I mean, Tom Napolitano, I'm okay, that's kind of old hat. But I'm saying, you look at some of these names, it's just like, they keep adding more vowels and more syllables every single week. No offense, you know, people. We're just having fun. But oh my, you kind of notice it sometimes. It's like, oh my God. It's like, just trying to pronounce it and not F it up so much. But then it's like, we have Andrea Shea. I guess that's close. But I mean, it's like a Bob Smith, Tom Jones. That would be nice.
You know, it makes me think, you know, and I'm already immediately getting off track with this, but like, what are the contracts actually look like behind getting a credit like Dan Jurgens? Because I think the highest level example of this is that maybe most, at least more hardcore comic book fans know, is the Siegel and Schuster stuff that it took to get them credited to Superman. But was when Dan Jurgens was helping them do this spinoff universe and kind of it being built on his idea, was there something in the writing that said anytime Tangent is used, you have to put this in the credit and then in the letterhead or something like that? I would actually be very curious to know the non-boring legalese behind getting a kind of perma credit like this attached to anytime X concept or character is mentioned.
That is true. It would be interesting to know whether how mandatory that is now, whether it was a fallout from all the stuff related to Superman and lawsuits up the wazoo forever, or whether it was just it's got to be on an individual basis, right? Because we don't see anything related to Far Sector.
That's true.
We don't see anything related to, and Lord knows, you would think if there was, I mean, because the way that they push Joe, you would think there'd be a lot of that. So I guess it is based on contract. That might be the answer to the overall general answer to the question. It's based on the creator, I suppose, and the deal that was made.
For sure. I wonder if you have to give up some revenue in order to get that. Or I don't know. Anyways, maybe if we ever have Dan on the air, we'll ask him.
Jurgens, not Kurtzky.
Yeah. Maybe Kurtzky knows. Who the hell knows?
That's true.
So jumping into this one, I'm going to do a very high level recap because there's lots of small details and things revealed in conversation. But we kind of open where we left off. Lunette is sick, out of it, whatever. And her brother plants the seed that Damona gave him outside of Lunette's little tent where she is sleeping and waters it. While this is all going on, the Green Lantern and Gar, who is Beast Boy, by the way, I stumbled over that fact last time we talked about this series. Talk about kind of everything, you know, they're worried about Lunette, and then Gar reflects on kind of what she has done for him and why she believed in him. And sometimes he talks a little bit, a lot of relevance here. He talks kind of about, you know, is it kind of fruitless to even be good? What's the point? You know, I'm a monster. I've always been a monster, but you know, my pain had a purpose. And you know, I feel alone and they're kind of, talking to each other about this and Rena talks, you know, to her credit, says that, you know, she believes in us. She believes in you. She saw you were a good monster. And then Gar tries to say, you saw me too. And she says, no. And then he's kind of goes off on his own and feels a little bit dejected. She comes back over. Rena comes back over to check on Lunette. Lunette is sitting outside by the campfire. And Rena is obviously very surprised about this until Lunette turns to look at her and has a very crazed look on her face saying, you tried to kill me, and immediately transforms into Damona. It's at this moment that Gar and the Bat Wraith realize that some of Damona's creatures have started to swarm in the area, and they're trying to fight it off and protect Lunette and Green Lantern and everybody in the area. This is where Damona and Rena have a conversation. Rena tries to burn her with a spell, but it doesn't work. And says, starts talking to her about kind of what she at least presents here as the logic behind things work. And this is not something uncommon to us, is as readers in comics, but the idea that magic has a cost is now introduced into the concept. The cost for Demona, it devours pain and misery and torment, is what she says. But yours prefers the more willful forces the kind little girls have in spades, like our dear Lunette. So she's talking a bit about how she's very clearly trying to draw a line between the pain and illness and everything that Lunette has been experiencing to being Rena's fault for that's the cost of her magic is being extracted from Lunette. It's revealed at this point that the seed that has basically grown up and ensnared Rena is now putting her into this dream state where she's having a conversation with Demona while all this swarm of monsters are attacking and Batwraith and Gar are trying to defend them while this is all going on. It's this point, Lunette's brother grabs her and starts carrying her towards the plant and Demona to kind of get them out of there. And in this, we go back into the story, the dream state with Demona and Rini, and she starts talking about how she saw Rini's origin and that origin where she, you know, she saw the Green Lantern, she got enveloped in this fire that persisted for 9 days, and then everything was destroyed around her, and her parents were dead. Apparently, her logic explanation was that, you know, the apocalypse happened, the obsidian seeds and all this other stuff. But you've known, Rena, you've always known you killed them. So that her being in that cocoon and her coming out of it, that's what actually killed her parents. And it's her own fault. Meanwhile, they try to, The Gar and Batwraith are trying to still defend everything, and we see Demona is actually there as Lunette's brother carries Lunette to him, and they're ready to go. She starts talking to Rena, and it's a bit unclear. I think maybe some of the stuff that Demona is saying is said out loud in terms of how it's all the magic is all eating away at Lunette. And it's at this point Lunette comes to, sees what the situation Green Lantern is in, and starts calling to her. This is enough to break Rena out of the spell, the seed, whatever you want to call it. And she starts asking where she is, and she says, no, I'm not going to tell you. You'll never learn. She says, shut up and burn. She can finally now, as she's out of this seed, exact her magic, and she starts taunting her and saying, keep on fighting me. Basically, you're draining her even more. And then her brother starts yelling at Green Lantern, saying, you're killing her. As Green Lantern gets a hold of herself and tries to run over to protect Lunette and talk down her brother, she reaches out to Batwraith for help, but he says he's just a ghost and he can't do anything. Just as Green Lantern is about to face down Demona again, she suddenly gets Green Lantern suddenly gets smacked down from behind. It is Gar, and he smacks her down into the ground, presumably, and we'll talk about it, because he's worried about what's happening to Lunette and trying to protect her. And then he approaches Demona to ask her to take him back and take the pain away. And she scoffs and says no. She picks up the lantern off the ground and blows out the green light. At this point, as she does so, the light goes out as we've seen it at the end of every issue, spreading across the map. The same lanterns and lights that have been left behind in previous cities all suddenly also go out. And Demona flies off with her horde, leaving Green Lantern alone in the back, well, with Gar, we see, of course, the celestial worm still approacheth, and then Rena wakes up in a sort of dreamscape that is labeled as Oa, the Emerald Realm, being confronted by the previous Green Lantern, as well as what we imagine are the Green Lanterns before her. But it is to be continued.
Done good, Chad.
And yes, I'm pretty sure I did research online. I don't believe we've seen these other two Green Lanterns before. I think this is just the prior Green Lantern. I mean, obviously, we'll have to wait and see, but I'm pretty sure this is the prior Green Lanterns that came before the Tangent Green Lantern that we know from the OG Tangent series.
Yeah, that would make sense because the Lanterns were all different. It was pretty good. It's certainly one of the better things that we've been reading lately, Green Lantern related. It was close to losing me again when they had her being so dependent on Lunette, which I am hoping we're going to get an even more of a thorough explanation for that, or why that, with this trio here, that to make it, to help Rena understand what's going on a little bit more. But just because I'm not a fan of that trope of having one person always dependent on the other person, it kind of gets old after a while. But the conversation between Gar and Rena, I really liked. I think that was actually the highlight of the book. I suppose it is interesting to try to guess whether we think Gar absolutely betrayed Rena on purpose, or was this part of a bigger plan? It's kind of hard to know, because on some levels it seems like she did do it. But then again, the fact that Damona makes a point of, even I couldn't see that coming, kind of makes you think that maybe there was another method to his madness there. But we'll find that out soon enough, too. I do like the fact that at least there's some growth in Rena. There seems to be some character growth in her after the first few issues where she was stuck in neutral all the time, always ending up in the same place. And that maybe because she's less selfish now and more selfless, maybe that's kind of it's easier for her to not just be more likable, but it's easier to for her to get a sense of purpose. But it was good. It was cool. I still don't really like Damona that much. Bat Wraith is kind of useless. I kind of suspect he'll play a role in the final issue, but he kind of like mocks himself in this issue by saying, "Well, I'm just really a ghost." It's like, well, thanks for nothing. Thanks for playing.
That's like, yeah. This conversation with Gar, yeah, I agree. Part of the reason I like it is probably because it's the most single words Rena has ever said.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, even that alone, regardless of the content of what she says, the fact that she's saying so much and it's not like mid fight or whatever is definitely just growth in and of itself.
Yeah, it's a good conversation of looking inward for both of these characters, because we've had like stop and go views on who they are, or we may think we have a grip or understanding on who they are, and then things have changed a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, should we actually assume that she did kill her parents, or are we still leaving that up for interpretation that that might have been manipulation?
I don't know. I think it's a hard dance to do, because she makes two claims here. One, that she killed her own family during her transformative state, and two, that what's happening to Lunette is because of her. So I kind of buy the Lunette side a little bit, just because maybe because I like the magic has a cost thing staying true. For half to be true, I kind of feel like it's either all true or all untrue. I don't think there can be a half measure there. I don't know why a half measure would make sense. So it's either all true or all false in my mind. And I could see there being a scenario where it's only drawing on Lunette because she doesn't necessarily have some piece of the puzzle about how to operate her own powers.
And her brother. And what her brother's doing. I think that's the biggest, if you're looking to not believe that there's this horrible connection that, you know, it's that she's like draining her life source or whatever every time she uses the power, that if you want to believe that she's just blatantly lying, if or even if it's what not telling the entire truth. You can make a case she's purposeful and misleading here, that it's because she is using the a-hole brother, Kane there. Appropriately named, as Damona points out, from Cain and Abel reference, clearly, that the fact that her brother is kind of like cutting her off at the knees here and working against her. It's like a double agent. So that the connection between the two might be less related to she's drawing the power directly from Lunette, but because every time Rena fights against Damona, that because of what Damona's doing spell-wise, that's actually, she thinks she's hurting Damona more, but she's actually hurting Lunette more because of what Damona did. So,
yeah. I don't know. And then the other side of the coin would be that even if she killed her parents in the transformation, in a way it doesn't matter. Like, obviously, for a kid to be told, whether by accident or not, that they were responsible for their own parents' death, that's something that would require any amount of struggle. But as an outside observer looking in, it almost doesn't matter because she wasn't in control in that moment. It wasn't anything she purposely did. It wasn't even a choice she made. There was nothing about that whole process that was in her control, in terms of accepting the power or being put in that situation or being even aware of what was happening. So whether it was an obsidian seed or what was happening to her in that moment, it's the same thing because neither was in her control.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a shot across the bow, but again, like you said, that if you're able to separate that and be realistic, that it wasn't anything you did consciously. You had no control over what was going to happen. So it still sucks, and it's still something you got to deal with. But the reality is, it's not the same as you lashed out in anger, and even though that was not your intent to hurt them. That you did. It's not like you still had a choice of not reacting the way you did. If so, yeah, I agree.
I also think then that if I feel that way, then my one critique then of this particular issue is that I wish the reveals were reversed, and that she was goading her and pushing her and, you know, making her doubt herself a little bit at the start, you know, kind of breaking the seal a little bit with the news that she killed her own parents. But the reveal, as, you know, Damona like whispers it into her ear, isn't "you killed them, you killed your own parents." It's "you're killing her." You know, like, I think then that would have had that moment have more weight, maybe, if the two were reversed.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Beyond that, artistically, I like this. I like that. I mean, there's a lot revealed here and a lot of magic and chaos, especially in the back half of the book. But that said, it's a relatively still, particularly artistically expressed moment through most of this issue, in the conversations with Gar, one-way conversation between Cain and his sister and planting the seed and all of this stuff. So it's relatively calm, quiet, and less ethereal and mystical and supernatural than some of the prior issues have been. That some of those elements are obviously still here, but as well as some crazy creature design and stuff, which still should be shouted out, of course. It was really well done, this particular issue. I think also because we have Damona and Green Lantern on the same page now, the orange, red, whatever hue and everything that Damona kind of exudes versus Green Lantern stuff makes for some good color matchups on the page.
Yeah, plus the cover is very Halloween-y.
True.
1 month too soon, even though we're technically rolling into fall, but still.
So the only other thing I've got here is Green Lantern says, and well, I'll just read it all. Rina Mori, Hello Little Moth, Step Up, Don't Be Afraid. Believe me, I'd much prefer a beach two or a discotheque at 128 beats per minute, but I digress. We have been waiting a very long time for you, Rina Mori. You've put up quite a fight, but the world needs saving, so allow our lantern's light to reveal all. Is there anything in the six issues we've read so far that leads you to believe we might know what they're referring to? Can we even speculate about where this is going?
It's going to be...
I got nothing, man.
Well, to be fair, it's going to be really hard for us to have much of anything because of the bi-monthly release schedule. It's kind of hard to remember what happened even two issues ago. I mean, you can make a case it's hard to remember last issue, but it's definitely harder to remember multiple issues. So if there were some serious breadcrumbs laid out here.
Well, in the series itself, but also, you know, being lanternologists, the context that we know of the Green Lantern from the Tangent universe as well, that included. Do you think there's anything?
I am not. There could be. I just have no, like you said, I have no idea what it could be. So I don't think I would hazard a guess.
My only thought would be something. It's not even a complete thought. It's like I've got half of a thought. Would it have something to do with how the power is operated? Because the way it worked for the previous Tangent Green Lantern was it was basically like a second chance, right? She could bring people back to sort of deal with their unresolved issues and things like that. It was like those for 24 hours because they kept that whole 24 hour limit thing.
That sounds right, but I am rusty on the rules for of the Tangent universe.
And that's obviously not what Rina has been doing.
No.
So, like, it's I was wondering if maybe it's tied into that somehow.
It could be.
Yeah. Otherwise, that's all I got. I think this might be the best series of what we've been reading so far. If not, it's top two with Absolute, despite my problems with Absolute of late.
Yeah, it is very, very interesting. How this, it's like a horse race. This book has been coming up on the outside. That it started off well and then fell behind, and now as it's getting closer to the finish line, it's making a last minute push to catch up. That I think right now it probably again maybe just simply because it does not have the baggage that a lot of these other books all have, and currently they all have baggage because even Absolute is dealing with the baggage of not just with the characters that we already know and have a knowledge base of, but the world and the mythology that they're trying to kind of like, for lack of a better way of describing it, kind of like bastardize to make it fit into this dark side universe. Even the whole concept, you know, the tangent universe, it's kind of its own thing. And yeah, they kept some beats related because it's still Green Lantern, but it's all kind of, that was kind of its own thing to begin with literally tangential ties to the source, our universe, in the rules. And now this is, you know, Rina seems to have less connection to, or an even more fragile connection to the Green, maybe than other lanterns. And that's maybe why we'll get the explanation. I just don't think this, and it's a miniseries, and it's not in continuity and all this stuff. So I think it just has a lot less baggage. And I think the baggage is what's bringing down a lot of the other books, along with writing and continuity mistakes. But the point is, but still, I think this has more of a natural get out of jail free card now that it's kind of been allowed to breathe and kind of picked up steam, too, because it was kind of putting along in the beginning.
All right. Well, I think that's all I got for this one. How about you?
Yeah, I think we could. I think we can call it a day on this book.
All right. What's next?
Yeah, it's not a lot of time to do this. Let me do the what I've seen, because that can definitely fit in the segment. Then we can segue back into our Green Lantern talk. All right. So what I've seen was the number two movie in the country last week. I saw Jaws. Which shockingly, and I should have done more research because the fact that they not only was it like a 4K restored print, so I think even if you saw it in 2D, it would have been fantastic. But they actually spent a lot. They did a good job on the 3D. The 3D was good. That even from the usually you have a good idea whether 3D is good from the in the opening credits. If stuff pops in the opening credits, then you kind of have an idea that the, especially if it's a live action movie. I mean, you would expect a 3D movie and an animated 3D movie that the credits are going to be good because it's easier. I mean, you're not post converting anything really. I mean, the way it just has to be drawn a certain way that, as far as I know, but the reality is that you could tell right from the beginning, the credits kind of popped, the water and all the water scenes, the water was really coming out of the screen towards you, which was really cool. So we had a good crowd. We actually had a pretty good crowd when we went to go see it on last Thursday. I might try to squeeze it in again. It looks like our theater is losing the 3D showings after tomorrow, but I know it must be playing for at least another weekend because I noticed it was still playing in 2D. But I love Jaws. So again, since it's one of my favorite movies, it was worth seeing in 3D, a good quality 3D. And I could watch Jaws pretty much, and I have a gazillion times, even though Jaws is a beautiful example that there are still some things in Jaws that kind of don't make sense or plot point wise kind of bug me. Momentarily, but it's so good you get over it. But there's one plot point in particular that kind of always makes me bang my head against the wall when it happens. Do you want to hazard a guess what that is, Chad?
No.
I can give you a hint if you want.
It's been so long since I've seen it. I'd rather not embarrass myself.
All right. It's on the boat right after the shark first really makes his appearance and everybody, and Quint's getting ready to get the harpoon gun and all the stuff. It's when Quint tells Hooper to tie off the first barrel. And Hooper, for whatever reason, it's a plot device. He decides it's more important to go get the tracker to put on the barrel than it does to tie off the barrel first, even though he knows, because he understands shark anatomy and he also knows the art of sharking in general, why it's important for Quint to get that first harpoon shot in the head, that he futzes around just long enough so when he gets the barrel tied off, by the time Quint shoots the harpoon, it's like a fin shot that he can't get him in the head. And it could obviously have changed the course of their hunt for the shark and vice versa, the cat and mouse game that gets played, if that first shot was a really good shot to the head, but it wasn't. So it kind of, and plus he does nothing but the tracker for the rest of the movie. So, I mean, including immediately after. I mean, obviously, it's only like a 2-day thing with the shark once he appears. So the reality is they don't need the tracker after on the second day because the shark keeps coming after them. But like at night, it's literally if he had kept the transponder with him to keep an eye on where it was, not only would they have known the shark was coming back towards the ship to attack them, but it would have made sense why it was so important to put that tracking device, because it really doesn't serve a purpose in the movie other than make a nice audio and visual when the barrel's closing back in on the orca overnight to know that he's going to ram the ship. But it's one of those things that I love the movie a lot, but it kind of as someone who's seen it so many times, it's kind of hard not to look at that scene and go, you should have tied the barrel off first because that was really much more important. but nonetheless, but yes, if you haven't seen it yet and you still have a chance to, even if you can't see it in 3D, see it in the 2D because the restored print is really, really, really good. And you get like a nice little 2-minute intro by Spielberg before the movie begins too. So that's kind of cool.
All right. What else do we want to talk about?
So actually, before we backtrack, because we are going to backtrack because we want to talk more about the whole parallax thing related to Green Lantern 26. Just for those who care, which there probably will be a lot of you, that the new Green Lantern Funko Pop, that classic Green Lantern Pop that came out today as we're recording this on the 3rd, September 3rd, that is available for pre-order pretty much everywhere. So that's a pretty cool. It looks pretty cool with Hal flying and having his power battery in his hand. I like it. I like the hair is a little different. So I think that's. Did you get that one? Or are you going to?
Yeah, I'll probably get it. It's what's the line called? Is it like Legacy or something like that?
Classics.
Classics. Yeah.
It says new classics, but I'm not sure if the new is just because it's the item is new, but it. But the line is definitely no matter what class. The Batman was cool too, actually. I didn't get the Batman, but
But when I saw them over the weekend and stuff, I was like, yeah, I definitely wanted the Green Lantern one, and it's cool. So we have been getting a decent amount of Green Lantern pops lately, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, for sure. I still need to get the word balloon one. I haven't been able to find it in the wild, so I think it's time I just bite the bullet and buy it online. And then I got to get that Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps cover one. And yeah, this one, I think. So that's three right off the bat.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good year for a pretty good, let's say, little over a year if by the time some of these come out, but. Yeah. So just as a FYI, I mean, who knows, some of these things, the pre-orders might be sold out depending by the time this episode comes out, depending on the quantity they put aside for pre-orders. But just in case, just figured it was, figured we would put that out there before we backtrack. So I've been thinking about this a lot, not just because I had to go back and re-listen to everything we said about the episode when I was editing it, but then Chad was so kind enough to show me the video clip of Jeremy doing an interview saying pretty much the same exact thing that was in the quote that we talked about on air last week. But for some reason, seeing it and hearing it, and not just getting it like a printed version of it, I think for some reason it bothered me more. So to summarize, Jeremy's basic view on this was, Jeremy doesn't really think Parallax is dead either. He just said, well, I think he's out there somewhere. And as far as the Jessica making that statement, it's like, well, characters only know what they know and they don't know what they don't know, essentially, was kind of like the explanation there. Which is a really weird explanation considering what his role is in Green Lantern as the keeper of the Emerald Flame at the moment. That's an odd approach to me. And how to deal with that. And this is what I mean. But first, I want to give Jeremy credit for being Jeremy's a pretty stand up guy. So like, if he doesn't know something, he acknowledges it. If it's a mistake, he will deal with it regardless of whether it's his mistake, somebody else's mistake, or whatever. The point is, he's not going to like you can make a case he was spinning here to a certain extent, but the point is he's going to address it and not just give you, oh, just wait and see, it'll make sense. Or the ever popular these things these days, it's like, oh, shut up, you 40-year-old man baby living in your mom's basement, shut up. That Jeremy's not like that, so we give him credit for that, just like I think we should give credit to the Green Lantern fan base as a whole for, even if it might have been in like lowercase letters, but it was kind of like a uniform, almost like a unified reaction of, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore, in the perspective of, they weren't just going to let this one go without calling them on it, because it's like, nope, this doesn't make any sense. This is inaccurate. Where did this happen? Tell us why this is not a continuity problem. So I'm glad we kind of, very quickly, everybody rallied around the flag on that. So the reasons why the Jeremy's explanation really bothers me is that if you look at his explanation would be fine under two real scenarios which are not present at the moment. If this was like a year down the road and Jeremy wasn't writing this book anymore and the next writer did this and somebody was interviewing Jeremy and this happened to just come out at the time, the day of Jeremy's interview, so the guy had felt compelled to ask him. It's like, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this because all Green Lantern fans are talking about this today and you wrote the book for so long. Then Jeremy's explanation would be fine because essentially would be saying, well, I don't agree with that decision, but writers can do what they want. I think it also would have been fine if this happened in another Green Lantern book going on right now that Jeremy was not involved in writing. So let's say it's an alternate timeline where Green Lantern Corps exists, but Jeremy's not either co-writing the script or co-plotting, that he has nothing to do with what's going on the page script-wise other than overseeing maybe an event. But he's not reading the other guy's script. He's not proofing it other than editorial, insert joke here, that it's just that he doesn't know anything that's going on the other side until it gets published. This answer would still be okay for that because essentially reading between the lines, he would be saying, I think it's a continuity problem, but he would be tap dancing around, not trying to throw the other writer under the bus. None of those things are applicable here because Jeremy's the Not only is he the architect of the entire franchise right now, this is in his own book, so the only writer he'd be throwing under the bus would be himself. It doesn't make any sense, even if you want to give the benefit of the doubt and say DC editorial said you can't use Parallax because there's a story coming with Parallax, which if that was the case, we would probably be happy because it would probably mean the following up on the Zero Hour 30th anniversary special. But even if they told him that, then having Jessica, and we'll talk about it being Jessica again, but Jessica making a declarative, definitive statement with no evidence, stating something that we as a fan base knows is not we know it's not accurate, makes no sense. And even if DC said, you can't use Parallax, and besides the fact that you can't use him, we want you to kind of drop the hint that the universe thinks that he's dead, because that's going to be a factor, that's going to come up in the story that we're doing too. Still, nobody said to do it in such a haphazard, half-assed way, where you have a statement made by the wrong character without any evidence to support why anybody would think this is true. It just, something about it just doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't work. Even if Jeremy wants to use Parallax himself, but he has to get him, he needed to get him out of this story. I don't understand why you needed another fear entity. Maybe that'll be clear. But if you wanted to imply Parallax was dead, or at least explain why he's not around, all you had to do was do something like when you're looking at, when they see all the entities on the other side of the source wall, somebody goes, that can't be Parallax, can it? And then Sinestro goes, no, it can't be. And Parallax is dead. And besides, Parallax is dead. And people would go, what the hell are you talking about? And then Sinestro could say something along the lines of, ever since I awakened him from the central power battery, I've had a special connection with him. I've always been able to feel him, but now I can't. And then Kyle could chime in. As much as it pains me to say this, Sinestro is right. Or I have to agree with Sinestro, because whenever I've been a White Lantern, I've always been able to feel the entities whenever I've been in that universe, including when I came back from refilling the reservoir. I could still feel Parallax. I just didn't know where he was. But now I can't feel him anymore. Then you accomplish everything you wanted to do, even if you don't need necessarily are trying to establish that he's dead. You could just say, I don't feel Parallax anymore. And that would make more sense than having somebody make. And it being Jessica, this follows a trend that we talked about, too. Jeremy seems to have this pattern of having the least qualified or least suited character do things and say things when there's better suited characters waiting in the wings to do that. Just like it should have been Simon helping Jessica. It should have been someone else other than Job talking about the entities on the other side of the wall. And it should have been someone other than Jessica making that declarative statement about Parallax being dead. If it was Sinestro, it would have had more weight. If it was Kyle, it would have had more weight with some explanation. So it's just been that's pretty much it. It's just been bugging me because something's missing. I mean, there's a piece missing here. Maybe this really is an editorial thing where he was told he couldn't use Parallax. But still, it still was his choice to do that dangling carrot of either saying that he's dead when he knows that he's not dead himself, or even if they told him to imply that he's dead, you could have given some supporting evidence to try to convince us why, okay, we don't really think he's dead, but we can understand why said so-and-so character might lean towards thinking he could be because of things like I said. That's it. It's just things like that. It just doesn't make any sense to me why. It's like courting controversy for no reason. And it's not like people don't do it. People make stupid statements all the time about things. But this, I don't think Jeremy's dumb. And I think he had to know this was going to be pushback. Again, assuming Jeremy knew ahead of time that it wasn't all spin, that he forgot that Parallax wasn't dead. And then he just spun it. He realized after the issue was published, that's how he was going to discuss it from a talking point perspective. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he did realize the Parallax was actually not dead, but then why would you open this door needlessly to, I don't know, but that's just me.
So yeah, the video Mark's referring to is from Lanterns Live, who is our friend Ralph, who's been doing that for a little while. It's over on YouTube, so just search Lanterns Live. As we record this, it was last Thursday, I think, that broadcast happened, where he spoke with Jeremy. And the question was answered. So I believe Ralph put out a short. So you can find that on the shorts there, as well as the full interview on the main channel as well. It's about a little over
a smidge over an hour. But here's my thing about that is, let's say, just holy devil's advocate, let's say Mark is being the most nitpicky in the world about this, and that's why you dismiss what he just said. What still stands is what I kind of what I was alluding to last time we spoke about this issue, is there's still, no matter how you slice it, there is still a problem on the page. And I reference this because in the interview that we're referencing here with Lanterns Live, and I don't know if it was in this short. I definitely remember it being in the interview as a whole, but I don't know if it was in this short. Jeremy was addressing like mistakes in comics and stuff like that. And he says, it's easy. You know, he said, and I agree with this, obviously, it's easier for me as the writer to make a change in the script or the dialogue to help address a problem than it is for the artist to redraw the whole page. And things like that, which brings me back to, the entities say that they created Parallax.
Well,
out of their own fear of the new fear entity. Yeah, whatever. But the very next panel is all of the entities, including a Parallax, a fear entity, alongside the entity with Kyle. So there's no way that what they just said is true, because according to what's on the page, if Jeremy knows Parallax shouldn't be behind the wall, then he shouldn't be in this panel, because there's no way the entities immediately got behind the wall with Kyle and the entity without Parallax, immediately started fearing for themselves, which immediately created a new fear entity. So there's still a problem on the page. So you can dismiss whatever opinion you want out there, folks, but there's no hiding that there is something wrong, either dialogue, explanation, plot, or art, wrong with the explanation that we're given. And for me, I'm sorry, but I blame, at the very least, editorial. I'm sorry. It's on an editorial, I think.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think there's a piece of this we don't know. There's a puzzle piece that we don't know. It would make sense. I mean, Jeremy, I see Jeremy as a guy who's probably a good soldier too. So if editorial did tell him to do something, he would do it, and he would probably not say, "Oh yeah, editorial asked me to do that." I mean, maybe down the road he'll be honest enough to say that, kind of like how, you know, Robert Venditti was honest enough to talk about, you know, making Kyle white again and not bring, I think he had said the same. I think he agreed or said the same thing about not bringing back the blues, that was DC editorial. But certainly the Kyle decision to make him from white to turn him back to green was a DC editorial decision. That wasn't a his decision. That maybe down the road Jeremy would be, you know, depending, you know, especially if he's not working for DC anymore or taking a break, that he might be more willing to lift the veil a little bit, as long as he's not talking, you know, talking out of turn. But the mere fact, again, that in Jeremy's response, you know, his explaining it, spinning it, however you want to define it, the fact that he openly admits that he doesn't even believe that Parallax is dead, but then he has a character make a statement that Parallax is dead when he knows the entire fan base, giving him the benefit of the doubt that he knew that before it got published, not somebody had to remind him after the fact, is like, crap, that Parallax technically is 100% alive. There's never been a story like this, that whatever you were thinking or whatever we were thinking, we were wrong. Assuming again that Jeremy knew for a fact that Parallax, you know, we haven't seen Parallax since that Green Lantern Corps, Hal in the Corps, Superman story, our Parallaxed. And the only last time we saw any Parallax was this 30th anniversary issue, which he talks about in that interview too, that if he knows that, then why would you have a character say something that you know the fan base is going to zero in on immediately, as they should, because it's wrong? And if you're going to try to make the point, why would you not have any supporting evidence to indicate, oh, this is why they think that? Even if we're not going to buy it, don't throw a blanket statement out there, which to support a point that we all know is not accurate to begin with, and then try to like gloss it over and move on, like, oh, it doesn't mean anything. That doesn't make it doesn't make any sense. And again, there's plenty of ways to explain Parallax out of the story without having to do that. There are ways to do that. So there's something about this that doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm hoping it means that there is a plan in place for a Parallax story sooner rather than later, and he has to be off the table for the story, that he couldn't be involved even, and you needed to come up with some kind of explanation for why he wouldn't be because of what was going on with the Spectrum. It would make no sense that he wasn't involved. Just like in theory, he would have been able to go, because I think they even said that during Lights Out that Parallax himself, I think, wanted to go with the other entities. It's just that Sinestro had him walled off so he couldn't go. So it's not because I think a lack of desire. I think they said that he was willing, that he wanted to actually join his brethren. It's just that Sinestro wouldn't let him. So you would have needed an explanation for probably why he wouldn't join them now or couldn't join them. But you could have been vague about it. But to blatantly throw out something which is not true in continuity, something we've never seen, and then either expect it to slide through, and if you don't expect it to slide through, then why now you have to spend your time defending it and talking about it, and it's needless because you'd done a better job explaining it. It's like the central power battery thing. As far as we know, he still hasn't been asked, or we haven't heard an answer for that sapphire power battery screw up yet either, have we?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, arguably that's more important because we know that Parallax thing is garbage, as opposed to being, hey, we don't even want to risk building this battery because things might go wrong with my power. Left side of the book. There it is. I don't know. There's something going on, whether editorial's not doing their job, whether it's much more of an artistic problem, even though this can't be an artistic problem because this was a dialogue issue. It could have been an artistic problem seeing Parallax behind the source wall with all the entities depicting the moment when Kyle dropped them off there. That could have been an artistic error. But the line of dialogue given to Jessica was clearly, that's on Jeremy. So I don't know. But it does kind of like sap the energy out of you to have to try to figure this out and come up with reasons why what's on the page might work in some way, when if it was just handled a little differently and made more clear, that if we wouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. All right. What else do we want to talk about?
But did you want to touch upon your other thing related to that issue?
Yeah, sure. So in the same issue, speaking of Parallax, fear entities, etc., it's weird talking about it only because Mark and I talked about it off air after we stopped recording, so I already feel like we addressed it on air, but we didn't. Parallax says when Hal is
Parallax in quotes, the new fear entity.
Anyways, he says when Hal is making his deal about, you know, you leave us alone and so on and so forth, you're not going to possess us. He says, I fear him, what is to come, what he has to do, what he will know. And that just corresponds a little bit with Green Lantern number 28, Solicit, which is a new page is discovered in the Book of Oa that says only two words, Hal Jordan. Upon reading this page, the greatest Green Lantern is thrust into a new mystery with massive ramifications. Now, the Solicit for 29 is already out as well, but it is actually a Green Lantern, Green Arrow team up issue. So there's really nothing more talked about there. So we really only have that to go on. Now, in terms of speculation and stuff, there's not a whole lot there, but I'm actually kind of stoked. Obviously it would probably carry more weight if it was actually Parallax, but a fear entity fearing Hal for what is to come into him is definitely something worth consideration.
Yes. And I hope that the whole reason we're getting this new fear entity is not just for little lines of dialogue for like that. I understand why you might, again, this is what makes me think maybe he couldn't use Parallax. The fact wasn't quote unquote allowed to use Parallax just because you didn't necessarily have to have a fear entity involved in this. It would make perfect sense on some level why Parallax at least wasn't in the majority of the story you might have to explain why you wouldn't join up with the other entities once they were, if they were all back on this side of the source wall working together. He sensed them all in one place. It would make sense that he would seek them out. But still, I don't necessarily know, based on conceptually, just by freeing the other entities from the other side, why we needed to have a new fear entity anyway. But, and I certainly hope, like I said, I just hope it doesn't exist just for, oh, because, I mean, would it be interesting to have a fear entity have a completely different dynamic with Hal, that this fear entity is literally afraid of Hal all the time? I mean, maybe we'll come up with the idea that even though he's not Parallax, he kind of has Parallax's memories in a way. And maybe he's, because of the way Hal was able to eventually overcome Parallax and stand up to Parallax, that like kind of like genetic memory thing, that this entity, that this entity has some built-in natural fear, respect, but natural fear of Hal Jordan, that he wants to stay away from Hal Jordan as opposed to our Parallax, which ironically always seems to want to buddy up with Parallax again because he was the best host ever. Yeah, I mean, I'm not unexcited to have a fear entity back. I'm more curious about why, you know, what the plans are for Parallax himself, why he can't be here. Because it's almost, again, it's speculation, but it's almost hard not to believe that there's something in the mix, something cooking here, or else why wouldn't they have just used him? Especially when he isn't dead and he is out there somewhere. So if you needed a fear entity, all you needed to do was wait for them to break through the source wall and have Parallax show up on like a big splash page at the end of an issue. That's all you needed to do. So that's, you have to believe there's a story coming that's going to involve Parallax, whether it's related to this Hal thing or whether it's related to, you know, ideally Dan and Ron doing a follow up to the 30th anniversary cliffhanger. Either way, but I do agree the solicits for that issue are interesting.
Yeah, it makes me wonder. I have no reason for this, but this popped into my head, so why the hell not? It made me wonder if we're gonna get a Flashpoint-esque explanation. You know how like part of the story of Flashpoint is that Barry's mother had to die in order for everything to go on with what happened to Barry. I'm wondering if there's gonna be some sort of reveal that, you know, Hal's destiny was to be a GL and what happened to his father was ordained or planned or, you know, put into action by the Guardians or some shit. I don't know. Well, I don't know why.
That's the Gerard Jones thing. Speaking of what we talked about off the air, that off the air conversation about the original plans for Emerald Twilight, that was the Gerard Jones, one of the big Gerard Jones reveal. The reveals in that story, which made Hal go rogue and go independent, even though he helped them beat the fake Guardians and Sinestro and Krona, then he couldn't work for them anymore because he found out that the Guardians, I don't know if it was going to be handed where Martin Jordan knew, because I think that's a cooler version of the origin, which of course you could have retconned it and added that in, but the Guardians were responsible for killing Martin Jordan or his death, because that's the only way Hal could become the Hal Jordan that we know. His father had to die. Now, it would be more interesting to me if the Guardians basically came to Martin Jordan and said, your son is destined for great things and will do such great good for the universe. But in order for that to happen, you have to die in this. You have to die this in this fashion in front of him, that and he was OK with that. I think that would be cooler because it would say more about, despite sometimes the contentious relationship between maybe Martin and Hal, that at the end of the day, Martin was willing to take one ultimately for the team and looking because how much he loved his son. But either way, yeah, that I would love for them to go down that road. Do I think they're going to? I don't know. Been a low hanging fruit for a long time to revisit that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
No, I think we covered everything.
Okay, sounds good. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
LanternCast.com is the website. Excuse me, LanternCast@gmail.com. That's where you can email us and ask us anything you want. Lord knows we will be. We're probably gonna have like an 8-hour episode doing feedback by the time we get to it. Maybe split into two. It might be a 2-day recording session. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag GLcast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think. And if you would like our Discord, email us too, and we will send you the invite.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.